Hello, gentlemen, and welcome to the Catholic Gentleman Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Guzman. Today, we'll be joined by Dr. Peter Kloponis of Integrity Restored, and we'll be talking about the growing problem of pornography addiction and what men can do to break free. Before we begin, please consider supporting the show on Patreon at patreon.com/Catholic Gentleman. Your support is greatly appreciated. Today, I am joined by Dr. Peter Kloponis. Dr. Kloponis has over 20 years of professional experience working with individuals, couples, families, and organizations. He specializes in marriage and family therapy, pastoral counseling, men's issues, and pornography addiction recovery. He travels throughout the United States and internationally educating Catholics on how to win the battle against pornography. Welcome, Dr. Kloponis.
Thank you for having me here. It's wonderful to be invited.
Well, as you have probably guessed, listening to that bio of Dr. Kloponis, we're here to talk about pornography. It's an issue that affects men of all ages. It is a growing problem due to a number of different factors, which we will discuss shortly. It's something that is also associated with a lot of shame. Men don't want to talk about it. They don't want to admit to it. They it's a serious issue. It's an issue that affects men of all ages, and yet it's an issue that very few people want to talk about due to the shame associated with it. There's a lot of people who think, despite how prevalent it is, that it's just me. I'm the only one who struggles with this problem. I go to Mass, I go to church, and surely I'm the only one who's ever struggled with pornography, and yet we know that's not true. And so we really need to change the conversation around this issue. So Dr. Kloponis, you know, as I was just saying, pornography is kind of the elephant in the room. It's a huge problem. Few people want to talk about it, but how pervasive is this issue?
This is a huge problem here. You know, we've known from research that, you know, at least half of the population is looking at this regularly. We're talking at least once a week. So, and of course, you know, the younger the age, the more often they're viewing it. You know, we have, you know, teens and kids and young adults who kind of grew up with the internet. They're the ones that are viewing it more often because it's so easily accessible to them. But we know that this is a problem with that. And, you know, I'll tell you, give you an example. You know, I'm sure people are probably familiar with the scientific method. Yes. You know, when you're doing research, you have an experimental group and then you have a control group. And the experimental group gets the treatment, the control group doesn't. When you're done, you compare them to see if there's any difference. Well, we can't do this type of research with pornography because we cannot find anyone to be part of the control group. And that would be people who have never seen pornography. Wow. So it just shows you that, yeah, this is pervasive. You'd be hard-pressed to find anybody who has never seen this. And we know, you know, for example, with teenagers, by the time a young man reaches the age of 15, I think 80% of those kids have had at least one exposure to hardcore pornography. So we know that this is very pervasive. And as you said, nobody wants to talk about it. You know, nobody wants to touch it with a 10-foot pole, but we do have to address this.
Yeah, I mean, it's the world has changed. I mean, we talk about, you know, a lot of... you know, middle-aged men, maybe they think about their first experience with pornography. It was, you know, maybe I was digging around in dad or grandpa's drawers and, you know, came across a Playboy or something like that. And yet the degree, you know, to which young people are being exposed to pornography now is on really on a whole nother level. Wouldn't you say? I mean, it's not just, you know, a static image anymore. It's quite a bit worse than that.
It is quite a bit, you know, and we were really groomed for this. You know, people talk about, you know, the internet, you know, and with the internet, there was this explosion of pornography use with that, you know, because it just became so readily accessible. Any types of laws that were meant to protect us from this could not be enforced. And so it was open for anybody. And so, you know, it wasn't just, you know, having to dig around in dad's or grandpa's drawers. It was just, let's just pull out the phone or let's just log on the computer and bam, there it is.
Yeah. And I, you know, I grew up right around the time of that technology explosion. You know, as a young man or a young boy, I should say, you know, I really came of age in an interesting time where my younger memories, technology was still very limited. I mean, there were still phone booths for crying out loud. I mean, and there were, you know, there were, you know, cell phones were these monstrous clunky things that you'd carry around in a briefcase or something. But by the time I was in high school, you know, smartphone hadn't necessarily been released yet. But computers, PCs, everybody was just fascinated by this stuff. I mean, technology was so exciting. But immediately that brought pornography into the picture in a big way.
It did. You know, yeah. When the internet came out, you know, we had no idea that the pornographers would be one of the first to jump on board. And even though it started out as just as you know, photos and images on the old dial up, still they realized that this was going to be the future of their products.
Right. Yeah. And it's just gotten worse from there. You know, now we're in the world of high definition and all that. But you know, you think about pornography, and I had someone comment to me the other day, and I think it is kind of strange when you think about it. But, you know, why is pornography so attractive to us? I mean, you know, you think about what's happening, and it's kind of strange. You're watching other people perform obscene acts. You know what? But from a biological and psychological perspective, why does this hook us so quickly and easily to the point where someone can be exposed to pornography and in a very short amount of time can be down this rabbit hole where they just cannot get out?
Well, we have to look at this as sort of two sides of a coin. There's a physical side, and then there's an emotional side. On the physical side, we have to understand that we men are wired to be visually stimulated. Right. That's it. You know, we see a beautiful girl walk by, we're going to look automatically. Right. So we're very visually stimulated. And whenever we see an erotic photo or an image, there is a chemical reaction that goes on in the brain. There's a chemical called dopamine that is released in huge amounts. And this provides a sense of thrill and excitement that the body and the brain love. You know, this is why people get excited even just at the thought of pornography or something sexual. It's that dopamine. People often say, particularly men will often say, that whenever they look at an erotic image, it gets burned into their brain and is there for a long time. There's another chemical responsible for that. It's called norepinephrine. We call it the snapshot chemical, and it locks those images. So, you know, this is why, to be quite frank, we men, we don't even need to look at pornography to masturbate. All we have to do is close our eyes, and we have a whole parade of images up there. Right. Now, norepinephrine will also activate the autonomic nervous system so that the heart starts beating faster, breathing gets heavier, some men may begin to sweat. So, and there's this sexual thrill and tension and excitement that builds and builds that can only be relieved with an orgasm. So the man masturbates. Now, with the orgasm, opiate chemicals are released into the brain, providing a sense of euphoria. And afterwards, there's this incredible sense of relaxation. Right. So when you look at this, the thrill, the excitement, the stimulation, the orgasm, the euphoria, the relaxation, that is a very powerful drug. Yeah. Very powerful. And the brain loves it, and the brain wants to go back to more. And the brain can become physically dependent on it. You know, it becomes so accustomed to operating at such a high level of chemical stimulation that it needs to maintain that just to function.
Right, right.
Go back to it. So that's on the physical side of this. How we can become addicted to it. Now, there's the emotional side too. And what happens here is, you know, there are several components of this. First of all, you know, most kids are introduced to pornography during their early adolescent years. And on one hand, they know that it's wrong, but still there's a thrill. It's fun. It's exciting. It's the forbidden fruit. You know, that's the age when, you know, normal teenage rebellion starts to come out. So it's that idea of getting away with something, you know, you shouldn't be doing that provides a thrill to that. So another thing that occurs is that, you know, these kids, they're getting into puberty. And naturally, they want to know about sex. And unfortunately, I've yet to find any kid who's had a really good, adequate sexual education. So when kids want information, if they're not getting it from mom and dad or school, where they're going to go, they're going to go to the internet. So for many young people, pornography becomes their primary source of sexual education, although they're getting the wrong education. They're getting wrong messages from that. And finally, for many people, in looking at pornography, even though they know it's wrong, there's this little voice deep down inside that says, hey, this is a great escape. This makes us forget all of our problems. This makes us feel good. So let's keep going back to this. So from now on, anytime we're bored, burnt out, frustrated, angry, embarrassed, ashamed, abandoned, rejected, sad, fearful, you name it, we're going to go back to this because this is the express train to pleasure. Now, unfortunately, the effects are temporary. And because of this, a person has to keep going back to it over and over again to keep their pain at bay. And this is where they become emotionally dependent on it. So it's not just becoming physically dependent, it's also becoming emotionally dependent on this drug. And this is where the addiction really sets in. Now, does the person realize they're doing it? No. All he knows is that he likes looking at porn just like every other guy. But this is what we find with the addiction, that there's both the physical side and an emotional side. And it is multifaceted.
Wow, yeah, that's a really potent combination of factors there. We're going to get to solutions, you know, and how we can begin healing from pornography use in a little bit. But I want to kind of come back to this idea that, you know, well, I'm just looking at porn. Like, it's fun. It's, you know, it's private. It's not really harming anybody. So what's the big deal? I mean, you know, why should I stop? I mean, it would take a lot of effort to stop at this point. You know, maybe I'm just like, you know, this is kind of like a friend that I go to whenever I'm feeling lousy. So, you know, for someone who would say that, like, what's the big deal? Mm-hmm. How would you respond to that? What are the harms that, you know, rampant consumption, or I should say frequent consumption of pornography cause?
Well, first of all, it's giving you the wrong message about sexuality. Okay. You know, in pornography, my definition of pornography is that it's any image that leads a person to use another person for their own sexual pleasure. It is devoid of love, relationship, and intimacy and can be highly addictive. Right. So here it's all about using people. And that's what lust is all about. It's about using people. And, you know, what good could come out of that? So this is the harm that it's doing there. Even though the porn stars, you know, may be complicit with it, they may be active participants, still it's wrong to use anybody. Another thing that we have to ask is, what is the message, or what are the messages that young people are getting from pornography about women and sexuality? Right? And the messages are simple. Women are here solely for my sexual pleasure. They don't need to be loved, protected, or respected. They love sex. They want sex, particularly the sex in pornography. They beg for it. They can't get enough of it. And this is what I should be doing with my girlfriend or my wife. All right. In reality, though, the sex in pornography is very dangerous. It's very painful. It's exploitive. In most cases, it's violence against women.
Yeah, right.
So you're not going to get the right messages about sexuality and relationships from pornography. And the sad thing is that for many young people today, pornography is their sole source of sexual education.
Which is truly horrifying. Mm-hmm. You know, you mentioned, you know, the idea of pornography being something that shapes our view of other people. Would you say that, like, you know, if you've learned to objectify, you know, somebody in pornography, will that trickle into other areas of your life as well that aren't necessarily sexual, but you still begin to see people as objects to be used rather than encountered and loved?
Oh, definitely. You know, pornography, it definitely fosters narcissism. You know, this sense that, you know, my wants and needs are paramount. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to be considerate of other people. of this, you know, in any area of life. Yes, it definitely does do that because, again, it teaches you that it's okay to use people, you know, whether sexually or otherwise.
And, you know, you think about these kids, you know, it just, it breaks my heart. You know, and I you know, first encountered pornography myself at 12 years old, I think it was. And that's, you know, that's pretty common stat, but I think that that age is dropping quickly. That average age when young men encounter pornography for the first time.
It is, you know, for a while, the research we had told us that the average age of first exposure was 11. Well, there's new research out now, particularly coming from England, showing that it's dropped to age 8.
Ugh, that's just horrible. And you talked about, you know, how that shapes your whole sexual education. Mm-hmm. You know, but you start learning about child development and how plastic a young child's brain is. I mean, our brains can change really at any age, you know, new neurological research has shown, but especially when you're a kid, you're just learning so much and you're just, the world is just kind of pouring into your mind and shaping your experience. And, you know, you think about these kids that are just experiencing, this is their whole understanding of what sexuality should be. So I was just reading recently an article about these sixth grade boys at a public school that were just, they were laughing about rape porn. They were all sharing it on their smartphone and just laughing about it. And this girl came home from school, and it was the daughter of the woman writing the article. She was just so distressed. She was like, I hate going to school. The guys are just like animals, you know, and they disrespect us constantly. And she just, it was in tears because she hated going to school. You know, what is this doing to these developing brains of these young boys?
Well, it's definitely having a harmful impact on their brain and that physical development of it, because what's happening, it's causing their brains to be hardwired to always expect to have that thrill and that high of dopamine going on there. You know, this is particularly true during the adolescent years. You know, during puberty, the brain is literally rewiring itself. Right? It's going from being the brain of a child to the brain of an adult. And there's this rewiring process going on. And what can happen is, you know, with that excessive use of pornography, their brain can become hardwired to be addicted to this stuff, you know, and that's what we're finding. You know, for the longest time, it was believed that anybody who was struggling with an addiction, pornography or sexual addiction, that, you know, there was some deep trauma that was the cause of it in their lives, you know, growing up in a home where there was abuse or addiction or something like that. But there were studies done that found that there were all these young people, these kids, these teenagers who were addicted to porn, and yet they came from wonderful homes, you know, wonderful families, good parents and everything. So the question was, well, why are they addicted to pornography? Well, it's a new form of the addiction called opportunity-induced addiction. And what they found is that, first of all, these kids were exposed to pornography at very early ages, you know, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And not only was there early exposure, there was consistent exposure. Every day they had access to it, you know. And of course, I cringe every time I see a parent giving a middle schooler a smartphone, right? Yeah. Because they're giving him all this access to the internet and the pornography. So what happened is, again, you know, because of this, we call it opportunity-induced addiction. There's early exposure and consistent exposure. Their brain became wired to be addicted to this stuff. Right. You know, now, these kids, they can overcome this addiction. They can recover from it. But it's going to be much harder for them than it would be for, say, a person who becomes addicted at the age of 40.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Because it's happening while their brain is developing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the common refrain I hear from well-intentioned parents is, well, my kid wouldn't do that. You know, I get, you know, you say, like, well, they just gave him a tablet for Christmas or a smartphone for Christmas. You know, no filters, no parental controls, and, you know, nothing, just wide open access to everything. You know, my he's a good kid. He wouldn't do that. I mean, how would you respond to that very common statement?
Well, and I hear that a lot. And sadly, I hear it from some of the most religious families, too.
Right.
Right, because they feel, okay, we're raising our child in a good, you know, holy Catholic family, teaching him the faith and morals and virtues and everything, so he would not do that. Well, but here's the fact, all right? you have a kid who is getting into adolescence, getting into puberty, very curious about sex. This is all natural. This is part of development. All right. And again, there's that normal, healthy teenage rebellion that's also setting in. They can, you know, kind of want to get away with these things. Right. You know, it's like the kid who steals a beer from his dad's fridge. He doesn't necessarily like the taste of beer, but there's a thrill in just getting away with doing that.
Right. Right.
This is what's happening. So, you know, they're good kids, but they're curious. They're interested in sex. Their bodies are developing. They want to know about this stuff. And the internet is just so easy to go to. So, yeah, you know, and I tell parents, you know, you have wonderful kids, but you have to understand where they are in their development. And you just can't blindly trust them when it comes to these issues.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's in like, as you mentioned, most of the time when I hear this, it's from families who are very, you know, they're homeschool families, they're very devout in their faith, and yet they just don't realize the extent of the danger that's out there and what it, how quickly it can have negative effects. So, you know, okay, let's see, you got a lot of young men, even a lot of young men today, you know, I don't know, millennials, you know, 20 to 35, something, somewhere in that range. As I said earlier, we kind of grew up during the technology explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And many of us were exposed to pornography at an unfortunately young age.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, perhaps, like, let's say, you know, you discovered porn when you were 10, and, you know, you're now, I don't know, 25. You could have been looking for porn for 15 years already. And you say a young man like this, he's a good Catholic young man, and, you know, he wants to get married, he wants to do what's right, he wants to embrace the, you know, the church's vision of healthy and holy sexuality in his marriage, and yet he's got, like, over a decade of pornographic images in his mind, as you said, you know, they're kind of burned into the brain. What can you do with those images, and how can you approach sexuality in a healthy way? Mm-hmm. What would you say to a young man who's really like they want to do what's right, but they're just trapped?
Well, first I would say you need to learn what is healthy sexuality. You know, what is God's plan for sexuality? What is healthy intimacy? What are healthy relationships? That there has to be that fundamental understanding of that. You know, we have the theology of the body. We have a lot of good resources for that. All right. And he has to understand how harmful and damaging pornography use is, how disrespectful it is toward women, how he's disrespecting himself when he looks at that, you know, and his understanding of that. Thirdly, if he is addicted to this stuff, he needs to get into a good comprehensive recovery program so that he can overcome this and get it out of his life once and for all. You know, and this is the type of thing you can't do it alone. All right. It's not like you can just, you know, go read some self-help books and overcome it and that's it. You need help from other people, and you need to be willing to do that. Have the humility to say, yes, I have a problem and I need help and I'm going to get help.
Yeah. So, I mean, taking that step can be really scary for a lot of people. You know, they think, well, I got this under control. You know, if I really want to, if I really feel the desire strongly enough, I can quit whenever I want.
Famous last words.
I mean, so it's not true. I mean,
no. You know, and I meet guys every day that are like this. You know, they try to do it on their own. You know, they'll read the books, they'll do these online programs and so forth. And the books and the programs are good. Don't get me wrong, they're good. But if someone is dealing with an addiction, they're going to need a lot more than that to overcome it.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get to that in just a second, but, you know, I want to just take a moment to focus on an issue of pornography addiction that's maybe not as commonly understood. You know, this idea that our emotions affect our desire for pornography, things like that. You know, and I read something recently that essentially said that that all addictions are about mood alteration, you know, or it, fundamentally that's a key driver of addiction, where
it's coping with negative emotions.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. And a lot of times guys think, well, you know, I'm a man, you know, I don't have emotion or whatever, you know, it's like, you know, there's this, these stereotypes in our culture about the way men deal with things that, you know, oftentimes can be very unhealthy. But the fact is, men do have emotions. Yeah. You know, we do feel anger. We do feel, you know, pain of being rejected and, you know, depression and all these different things that the guys struggle with just as much as women. And yet, and all of these things can affect, you know, our sexuality and our bodies and our minds and all these things. So, you know, can you just break down for us briefly, what is the relationship between, you know, our emotions and our use of pornography, or, you know, those unhealthy emotional states that can often drive us to our addictions?
Well, there is a huge one. We know that when it comes to addictive substances and behaviors, they're used to change or avoid negative emotions. That's what it is, you know. And as men, we're often taught not to show our feelings. You know, big boys don't cry. So we don't show our emotions. We don't let people know when we're sad or we're hurt or we're angry or whatever. So we stuff it all down inside. So where do we go with that? What do we do with that? How do we cope? And this is where addictive behaviors and substances come in. This is where pornography comes in. You know, so many times you'll hear a person who struggles with alcoholism say, "I drink not to feel."
Right, right.
Yeah, this is what it is. It's, I use pornography not to feel. It's an escape. And when we look at this, really, the pornography use is the symptom. All right. It's the symptom. It's not, you know, what we need to do is get to the root cause. You know, what are those negative emotions and what's causing those negative emotions with that? You know, and that's what we find. And another thing that we found is that about 90% of the time, the root cause of this has nothing to do with sex.
That's
nothing at all. It's just that pornography has become the coping mechanism. You know, and why do people choose pornography? Well, there's, I call it the five A's. It's affordable, accessible, anonymous, accepted, and aggressive. It's affordable. It's free. You got to buy drugs and alcohol. It's accessible. It's just a click away. Right? It's anonymous. It's easy to hide. It's not like getting drunk and going out and driving your car and killing somebody. Right? It's accepted. In today's world, particularly among young people, it is perfectly acceptable to use pornography. Right? They'll talk about it openly. You talk about those kids, those sixth graders laughing about rape pornography. Yeah, it's perfectly acceptable to use it and talk about it. And finally, it's aggressive. It's instant gratification. You know, when you drink, you have to wait for the alcohol to go through your bloodstream to hit the brain to get the buzz. Well, with pornography, it's right through the eyes, right to the brain, instant gratification. Right. So that's why this is the new drug of choice. You know, people talk about the opioid epidemic, which is terrible, right? But it pales in comparison to the pornography epidemic.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, if things continue as they are, it's only going to get worse. I mean, you're talking at the beginning about kind of that powerful cocktail of ingredients that makes pornography so compelling, and we see, you know, like those five A's you just mentioned. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's so easy. It's just so easy. It's right there. You know, so you know what. Where can we begin to heal? I mean, it's such a overwhelming thought, you know, for a lot of guys when they're trapped in this, like, you know, once they realize they've kind of hit that wall, like, wait, I can't quit this on my own. I've tried, I've read the self-help books and tried the programs and things like that, and nothing is working. What's the first step to real recovery?
Well, I think the first step is, like with other addictions, looking at it as a disease, right? This is not a moral failing. It's not that you didn't try harder. It's just, okay, this is a disease and you deserve to be treated for it. Right? You know, you're a beloved child of God who deserves to get the help that he needs. So it's recognizing that, you know, letting go of the shame associated with this. All right. And being able to reach out and say, hey, I need some help for this. I need some help. And 99% of the time when people reach out for help, people are very open to helping them. You know, I've worked with many young men. They're terrified to tell their parents or their friends that they're struggling with this. But once they do muster up the courage and tell them, they find that they get a lot of great support. A lot of good support with this, you know. So, but it's being able to reach out for help and say, hey, I need some help with this. I can't do this alone. And there's a lot of help available out there. There are many good resources out there to overcome this addiction.
Yeah. And you say, you know, a lot of guys, it takes a tremendous amount of courage. So if you're kind of at that place and you're just contemplating reaching out, I mean, that in itself is a huge step. Just getting to the place where you're willing to reach out is huge. But so regarding the, what you just said about, you know, this being a disease, but, and not necessarily a moral failing. Now, a lot of guys might say, wait a second. You know, isn't the Catechism of the Catholic Church clear? Like, isn't this clearly like a mortal sin? Like, you know, don't I have to go to confession for it? You know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there is a tremendous amount of guilt that surrounds this issue. And yet we, you know, don't want to like deny that and say that it's okay and all those things. So how, what is the right balance, you know, between this is a disease or this maybe is something that is sinful, or where do we find that balance?
Well, what we find is that when a person becomes addicted, you know, they lose their free will. Okay, that ability to say no is lost. So when that need for a fix comes up, you know, as much as you try, you just can't help it. You keep going back to it over and over again. All right. You know, and that's when you know, and I've known lots of people, you know, they try as hard as they can, you know, they'll go a week, maybe 10 days, and they have a fall. And this keeps happening over and over again. At that point, they're trapped in this. They've lost their free will, the ability to say no to this and keep it out of their lives permanently. All right. So when you get to that point and you've lost your free will, this is where the church says, okay, you know, you're dealing with an addiction here. You know, when you're falling, it's not a mortal sin. Now, you know, that's, I have to qualify this, however, because even though you may not have any control over avoiding the use of pornography, you are still responsible for recognizing that you have a problem and for getting help. All right. And if you know you have a problem and you refuse to get help, then that's a mortal sin. Yeah. But if you recognize it's a problem and you're getting help, and you're still occasionally falling, you know, it's not like a person gets into recovery and they stop using pornography from that moment on forever. You know, it's usually a gradual decrease until it's finally eliminated from your life, you know, but in that process, if you have falls, you know, okay, don't worry about it. You're not responsible for that. As long as you're out there actively getting the help that you need, that's what's important.
Right, right. Now, a lot of guys, you know, they're terrified. They take that first step. What is the program look like for somebody? You know, they've been looking at pornography for 10 years. This is really hard to break. What is the program look like? Is it
okay? Well, there are many programs out there. You know, the program that I develop is called the Integrity Starts Here Recovery Program. You know, and it's based on 7 points in my research. These are the 7 things that are needed for a healthy recovery. They're all evidence-based and have been researched thoroughly. So point number one, I call honesty, self-knowledge, and commitment. Right? You start by being totally honest with yourself, with God, with other people. You admit you have the problem. There's no denial. You take full responsibility for the addiction, for your recovery, and you're committed to doing whatever it takes to recover. So if recovery means you have to move a mountain, well, by golly, you better be ready to move a mountain. Okay. Self-knowledge also means knowing what your weaknesses are. So it's understanding the triggers that can lead you into pornography use. Understanding the danger zones, those times, places, and situations where you're more likely to fall. Understanding any rituals you may have in seeking out porn. With that information, we can then create the strategies to avoid pornography. I call them battle plans. All right. And it's important to have that. That's point number one. Point number two is purifying your life. We get rid of all pornography. We get rid of all access to it. We make sure it doesn't come back. Here's where we make sure all of your use of technology is being monitored. I'm sure you've heard of software such as Covenant Eyes. You know, we make sure everything is being monitored. We work on setting clear and healthy boundaries in the person's life with people, places, things, technology, time, situations, all of that, so that we can make sure that this stuff gets out of our lives and doesn't come back. Point number three is support and accountability. You cannot do this alone. All right. There are no lone rangers in recovery. You need to surround yourself with other men who understand the struggle, who are going to be there to support you and keep you accountable. And here's where support groups come in. They're very important and are really needed. All right. Point number four is counseling. And that's getting to the root cause of this. All right. What are you self-medicating? What is it that you're avoiding? You know, and learning how to deal with negative emotions and how to reach out when you're feeling bad. That's what's important. If there are any deep wounds, we work on the healing of those wounds. So counseling is very important with this. Point number five is a spiritual plan. You need God. Now, it's not like we're simply going to pray it away, because we know that doesn't work. Okay. So, and I tell people, you know, you don't want to ask God to take it away. Instead, you invite God into it to walk with you through this healing and recovery process. And that's where you really grow in your relationship with him, right? And that's where you really develop that intimacy with God. You know, God wants to use this struggle to draw you closer to him. So I tell him, and don't ask him to take it away. You know, come at it from the other direction. Invite him into it. And we talk about how to do that using scripture, prayer, sacraments, spiritual direction, all of that. And you know, we work on that. Wow. Point number six is education. Right. With any program, there's going to be an educational component. Understand the addiction, the dynamics of it, the roots of it, the recovery process, understanding healthy sexuality and intimacy. So there's going to be education. And point number seven is virtue. If you're going to fight a vice, you have to do it with virtue. So what are the virtues we're going to work on? Well, honesty, patience, perseverance, courage, faith, hope, love, all those things. Right. See, the ultimate goal of recovery is not simply ending the use of pornography. The ultimate goal is transformation, becoming a new creation in Christ, becoming the man God created you to be. This is what I tell all the men I work with, that God's got a bigger plan here, and it's an exciting one. Right. But these are the 7 points, the 7 components of a good, healthy recovery program. And when you look at many successful recovery programs, they all usually have some iteration of those 7 points.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. That's a little bit more than try harder or say another rosary.
Yes. But the key is, you know, you're not doing it alone. Right. Okay. You know, oftentimes you have a therapist, you have a coach, you have a spiritual director, you have accountability partners, you have a sponsor, you're working as a team. And this is the secret to the success.
So why is that so important? I mean, a lot of guys say they look at our culture and it's so individualistic. And, you know, we're told that we should be able to do it alone. You know, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, screw up your courage and get over it. You know, why do we need help?
Because it doesn't work that way. that's the best answer I can give you, because doing it that way just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, what works is, you know, we were created to be in community. Even though our society tells us to be individualistic, that's not the way we were created.
Yeah.
All right. We're created to live within community, to provide support and accountability to one another. And when you have that team approach, that's where things get done. You know, you look at the army. An army cannot win a battle with, 10,000 individuals.
Right.
They got to work with 10,000 who are acting as one, helping each other. That's how we do it.
So, you know, they're talking about doing this, you know, with help and support and things like that. You know, we talked a good bit about young people, you know, teenagers and under, who are just wrestling with the whole beast that's kind of, you know, taking over our culture. But what about, you know, these guys who are married, they're maybe struggling behind the scenes. They're terrified to tell their wife because they have no idea what's going to happen. You know, they're just dedicated to maintaining the good Catholic man image, but it's just, can't open up to anybody. Can't lose my reputation. Can't put my marriage on the line. You know, what would you say to guys like that who are struggling, who are fearful? They're just terrified of what's going to happen if they open up about this. What would you say to guys like that?
Well, first of all, again, you have to muster up the courage to tell your wife. Okay. First of all, one thing you have to understand about women, they're very intuitive. They know when something is wrong. They know when something is going on. They can tell. They may not know what it is, but they know there is something wrong. Okay. So when you tell them, you admit that you're struggling with this problem, yeah, they're going to be hurt. Yeah, they're going to be angry with you, but they're also going to be relieved because now they're going to say, aha, now I know what's going on here. Yeah. Okay. And most wives are really willing to be there when, and to help their husband through this. So, and really, when it comes to this addiction, most wives have said that it's not, you know, the pornography use that's the worst part. It's the lies and the deceit. That's what they don't like. The women say, I can handle the addiction. You know, we'll do this together. We'll get through this recovery. We'll, you know, we'll succeed. But they cannot deal with the lies and the deceit. So I tell men, really, you know, you have to muster up that courage to tell your wife that. And a lot of men are so afraid, well, my wife will leave me, you know, she'll divorce me. I say, you know, 75% of the time that doesn't happen, right? It doesn't happen at all. Yeah, your wife is going to be hurt. She's going to be angry. Okay. But, you know, we can work on the healing of that. So, and there's actually a saying in recovery that in order to save your marriage, your recovery has to become more important than your marriage.
Huh, wow.
Why is that? Because recovery is all about getting healthy. And that's what women want. They want healthy husbands.
Yeah. Right. So, you know, marriage is in big trouble these days. Guys are struggling with this, don't want to open up because they, you know, they're terrified. But, you know, you're saying that they don't have to necessarily be as afraid as they might be. A wife has to kind of go through her own recovery process when this kind of thing happens. But what role does a wife play in a man's recovery? Should she be the accountability partner, or should that be somebody else?
A wife's role is to simply be there to give him moral support. She should not be an accountability partner, but even though she may want to be, she should not be, because then that puts her in the position of having to be the policeman. Okay. It's just to give her husband moral support. The best way that a husband can help his wife is to be committed to his recovery program. Right, that's it. Now, a wife also has her healing to go through because, again, she feels very hurt. She feels very betrayed. Some women will experience symptoms similar to post-traumatic stress disorder. We call this betrayal trauma, right, where they're traumatized by this and they need help. They need to be in their own healing and recovery process.
Yeah. Yeah. You're talking about recovery being, you know, meeting that or reaching that point of health. She needs to be restored as well. But is it, you know, just kind of getting big picture here again for a second, is it possible to live porn free? You know, a lot of guys would say, well, surely maybe you can reduce it. Maybe, you know, like once or twice a year, but porn free, like really, I mean, in our day and age, is that really realistic? How would you respond to that?
It is realistic. It is possible, you know, because the fact is that porn isn't needed.
Yeah.
All right. Porn is not a need. You know, food and water is a need. Porn, if you don't have it, you'll die. Porn is not. If you don't have porn, you're not going to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I think the problem is that, you know, because it's so prominent in our society, people tend to think it's a need, just like people think sex is a need.
Right.
You know, sex is not a need. You know, if, you know, like I said, food and water is a need. If you don't have it, you'll die. If you weren't able to have sex for the rest of your life, yeah, it would be a cross to bear, but it wouldn't kill you. Right. Sex is an appetite.
Yeah.
And it needs to be fed properly in the right context. All right. So, and pornography is not part of healthy sex.
Yeah.
It is not. So why would you want to have it at all in your life?
Yeah. So, you know, I talked to a lot of young guys and a lot of them are scared to get married, just scared to get into that commitment. There's surely other issues there, but a lot of times they're getting older and older and they're just scared to ask a girl out or get in a committed relationship. You know, what would you say to single guys who they say, well, you know, I know sex is like meant for marriage and like that's God's design and God's plan, things like that. But what can I do in the meantime? I mean, I don't have a wife that I can be properly intimate with. How can I have healthy sexuality as a single person?
Okay. Well, we have to distinguish between sexuality and being sexually active. Okay. A person can have a healthy sexuality and not be acting out sexually. All right. Again, you're going back to that sense that sex is a need and I have to do this and I have to get it done. And if I can't, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. So, and this is what young men have to understand, that, you know, if they make the choice to live a chaste life until they're married, all right, it's not going to kill them. In fact, they'll probably find a lot of blessings coming out of that.
Yeah.
All right. So, and I think it's ultimately getting back to overcoming that fear of commitment, that fear of relationship. You know, many people are dealing with that because they come from broken homes, divorced homes, and so forth. And so there are some other wounds that they need to work on healing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, what words of hope would you give to men listening to this who, you know, have almost certainly encountered pornography at some point in their life? Maybe they're looking at it frequently. But they're just, maybe they're feeling that despair, like, this, I am never going to get over this. I have tried 10,000 times and just fail. And I'm just, you know, mm-hmm. I'm ashamed to go to mass. I'm, you know, ashamed to pray, ashamed to face my wife. I'm just, I feel like a wretch. Like, what would you say to someone like that?
Okay. You can overcome this. You can recover from this. You can live without pornography, but you got to reach out for help, right? Most men, if they feel this way, they feel like a failure, it's because they've been trying to do it on their own, and you can't do it on your own. You need to reach out for help. That's the only way. And that does take a lot of humility and a lot of courage. But I'll tell you, the most successful men I've ever found in recovery were the men who got to the point where they could say, I don't care who knows about this. I don't care. I need help, and I'm going to get help, and I'm going to do it if it's the last thing I do.
Right.
Right. When people have that determination and they're able to let go of the shame and the fear, get the help they need, they're the ones that are the most successful.
Yeah. So take that step, reach out. Where do you have any recommended resources, counseling centers, coaching, something like that can help guys?
Well, you can go to our website, integrityrestored.com. And in 2020, we're going to be launching a coaching program for men, which will be online, a 3-month online program for men where they can seek help, again, as a community. You could also go to my website, peterklaponis.com, where I have all kinds of free resources that you can take a look at.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Klaponis. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Thank you for having me.